Hare Krishna. So let's start with today's session. And I see there are around 263 participants for this session of exclusive Q&A. In fact, this is a live Q&A, but along with that, offline also I keep getting many questions. And really, the questions are very intellectual. And I see that participants are very much inquisitive to know various aspects of Bhagavad Gita and various aspects of life in general. So let me check what questions we have for today. Okay. So we have, as I said, we have various categories. So I start with the category of called as Gita. So we have various devotees asking various questions on the goal of life. This is the category which I'm seeing. So we have Chetana, Deepak, Shweta, Rajat, Kanti, Ghosh, and Saujanya. They are having these questions. What is enlightenment? How does a person know that he's enlightened? And then second question, spirituality's ultimate goal was told, but the question is for survival and welfare of family. We need to work, need to take care of kids, health, studies, behavior, etc. For better future, so there is always a confusion. How to choose a definite goal in life and move ahead, whether better job or to look after kids, etc. What is nirvana? What is mukti? How to get mukti, free from the cycle of birth and death? Everyone says that each and every person born on earth has a purpose, or they need to utilize their birth purposefully. How to know that? So, very wonderful questions which the participants have put forward. So, when it comes to what is mukti? So, if you remember, in the last session on Sunday, we had discussed about soul. Soul is covered by subtle body, and then subtle body is covered by gross body. So soul has got two coverings, subtle body and gross body. So now when the soul gets transferred from one body to another at the time of death, what happens is the gross body, which is there, so that is left behind. So soul, along with the subtle body, it travels now from one gross body to another gross body. Hope this is clear. So this is called a soul transmigration. So if you remember the shloka that we discussed in the last session on Sunday, Dehinosmin yatha dehe kaumaram yauvanam jara tatha dehantara prapte dhiras tatra namayati. Second chapter, 13th shloka. So this says Dehinosmin yatha dehe. So now Dehinosmin, so the person, the soul is there in Deha, and this soul is moving to which bodies? Dehinosmin yatha dehe kaumaram yauvanam jara, from boyhood to youthhood to old age. And finally, at the time of death, what happens? Tatha dehantara prapte. At the time of death, the soul moves to another body. Now, the question is, so does soul move alone or someone else is also going with soul? The soul, along with the subtle body, is moving to the next body. So now, what is mukti? So many times, people feel that mukti means, you know, hang yourself. And we say, rest in peace. You know, that person committed suicide. He wanted to be free and things like that. No, it doesn't work like that. In fact, when it comes to this aspect of hanging oneself or killing oneself or whatever, the suicide which is there, people think that, you know, that will give me relief. End of everything. No, not end of everything. How can you say it's end of everything? End of only this body. What about the spirit soul covered with the subtle body, that is mind, intelligence, and false ego? They travel from one body to another. So dying or death is not nirvana. That is not moksha. That is not mukti. So what is mukti basically? Mukti means a soul which is covered by the subtle body. The subtle body, now the soul has to get free from that subtle body. So only when the soul gets free from the subtlety, then that original spirit soul can actually go back to Vaikuntha. That is called as mukti. So currently we are covered with two layers. So we have to get rid of those two layers. And how can we get rid of those two layers? So when it comes to gross body anyways, you know, with death, you know, this gross body anyways will leave. But then the subtle body which is there inside, the inner covering of the soul, or the inner covering which is there. So that we can get freed only when, you know, we reach higher levels of spirituality. Like, for example, have you all seen a coconut? Now the coconut, I'm talking about the entire coconut. So when the coconut dries up inside, what happens? When you shake, you'll be able to hear some sound, isn't it? So that, what is that sound? That sound is the hard shell of coconut which is there. Inside there is soft pulp. Now, with time, what has happened is the inside pulp has got dried. And now the inside pulp that has got detached from the main shell. So when you shake it, you'll see that inside pulp is detached. So with practice of spirituality, what happens is the soul gets detached from the subtle body also. So when the soul gets detached from the subtle body and leaves the gross body, that spirit soul, that pure spirit soul, which is not contaminated by subtle body or gross body, now that, you know, is called as mukti. That spirit soul goes back to Vaikuntha. Hope this answers your question about spirit soul. Now there was one more question which talks about the responsibility. What is the responsibility? What is the goal of life? Many people ask this question. What is the goal of life? Goal of human life is only one, and that is breaking the cycle of birth and death. Now the question is, why only humans? Why not animals? Because only humans have got intelligence. Only humans can come like this for an online session on a Thursday evening and understand the different concepts of Bhagavad Gita. We cannot see. Even if you sit with your cat or dog at home and you tell your cat and dog, see that bald person is speaking something, look at him. They'll not be able to make out whatever I'll be speaking. So only people who are intelligent, I mean human beings who are intelligent, they are the ones, you know, who will be able to understand, you know, what is the goal of life. And for them, Shastras very clearly mentioned, goal of life is to break the cycle of birth and death. Only human beings can do that. No one else, the living entity, can do it. It's very clear, very clear. Because only human beings can understand the philosophy, understand the manual which is there. And that manual is also meant for human beings. Bhagavad Gita is meant for human beings. And then when we imbibe those teachings, when we start practicing bhakti on day-to-day basis, that will happen. The coconut example which I gave. The inside pulp will get detached, you know, from the shell. Now, some people might ask, oh, if the goal is to break the cycle of birth and death, then what about taking care of kids? What about work? What about other things, other responsibilities? So, obviously, I would not say that give up that and come here and join me in the ashram here. So, that is not allowed. So, a person to become a monk, so only that happens when that person is a bachelor, when he is not married. So when he's not married, when he's in the stage of brahmachari, so there are four stages of human life: brahmachari, grihastha, vanaprastha, sannyas. So brahmachari means bachelor life, grihastha means married life, vanaprastha means retired life, and sannyas means finally the person survives after 65, he can take sannyas. So now the thing is, when it comes to married people, they cannot give up family. This has to be very, very clear. Anyways, I'll keep repeating this statement because many, many people have this doubt. Oh, what if, many times the Matajis, the wives, the females, the ladies, they have this doubt. Oh, my husband is attending these Gita sessions. What if, he'll leave us? In fact, one lady asked me this question. So she asked this question that my husband is becoming very serious in bhakti. What if he leaves us? Okay, even if he leaves you, where will he come? He'll come to us, right? We'll not take him, don't worry. It needs qualification. And what is that qualification? Qualification is that the person should take care of their responsibility. So we're married, so he has to take care of his responsibilities. That is very, very important. So in married life, people have to take care of the kids, you know, of the spouse, and whatever responsibilities are there. But now the thing is, so taking care of kids and family is different. Goal of life is to break cycle of birth and death. How come one side is this, other side is this? So does that mean married people can never attain the goal of life? So the answer is that this side and this side both have to come together. That is the responsibilities, taking care of the family and breaking the cycle of birth and death. Both have to be got together. And how to do that? By keeping God in the center of the family. You see, one of the important points is in any family you take up, there's always a fight, you know, between the husband and wife, and then later when the kids grow up, between parents and kids. What is the fight all about? The fight is all about who is the owner of the house, who is supreme in the house. The husband might say, I am the supreme in the house. The wife will say, why you're I'm also earning, I'm supreme. And then when the kids grow up, you know, they say, we are earning now, we are the center, we are the center. So like this, what happens is the center keeps changing again and again, every now and then. So that's the reason there is no peace in the family. And so much of time goes in just quarrel, just goes in quarrel and fights and misunderstanding. So a person who wants to attain the ultimate goal of life, that person should keep God, Krishna, in the center of the family. And all the family members should serve Krishna. So now the connection which is there of the family members is like the husband is connected to the wife through Krishna. So husband is connected to Krishna, wife is connected to Krishna. So who is the one who's connecting both of them? Krishna or God is connecting both of them. So in this way, when all the family members are serving Krishna very nicely every single day, what happens is there's a tight bonding amongst the family members. And since all of them are practicing bhakti, so all of them are devotees. And it is very clearly given in the Shastra that Aradhanam Sarvesham Vishnu Aradhanam Param. And then the next line, I'm not remembering, this is Lord Shiva is telling Parvati. So he's saying that Aradhanam Sarvesham Vishnu Aradhanam Param. Vishnu has to be worshipped first. And then in the next line, you know, the next two lines, which it says that more than Vishnu worship also, if someone worships the devotees of Vishnu, that is even more topmost worship. Now, when we say worship, it means, you know, serving them, you know, serving the devotees. So when all the family members are devotees, what happens? You're serving the family members, you're taking care of the family members. Now look at the point that has changed. Before, you're taking care of your spouse, your kids, and now you're taking care of whom? You're taking care of the devotees of Krishna. Now what's happening? There's entire transformation. And now, since we are serving the devotees, we are actually serving the Lord. And that is what is the thing that will actually help us to attain the goal, serving the Lord entire life. Now, when we are going to office and we are earning, whom are we earning for? We are earning for devotees of the Lord. Now, when we are helping our kid to grow, now whom are we helping? We are helping the devotee of the Lord, now, to grow very nicely, now, by sending them to school, by taking care of them, basic needs, etc., etc. So the point is, each and every family member in the house should practice bhakti. And when everyone becomes devotees, when everyone is chanting very nicely, automatically when they are serving each other, they are serving devotees, and that is equivalent to serving God. And that's what will help the person to attain the ultimate perfection, that is breaking the cycle of birth and death. Because when we serve devotees, we actually get purified, and that purification helps us to break the cycle of birth and death. So again, one line answer to the question. So what is the goal, main, what is the goal of life? The goal of life is to break the cycle of birth and death first. And what is this breaking the cycle of birth and death? What is mukti? The soul get freed from the subtle body and gross body. That is mukti. Third, so if goal is to break the cycle of birth and death, I have other responsibilities also. That is taking care of family. So why not combine both? Why not everyone come together in the family? Every single day in the morning, sit in the circle, husband, wife, and kids, and chant Hare Krishna Mahamantra. So everyone's devotees. And then when they serve each other, they're serving devotees. They're serving the Lord, and they'll get purified, and they'll be eligible to break the cycle of birth and death. I hope I answered your questions, whatever questions you know all of you have asked. Yes. Yes, I've answered all these questions. If still anyone has any doubt, you know, I'll be happy to answer. You can text me a follow-up question. Now, let's go to the questions on soul. So there are many questions on soul. So I heard there are so many Brahmas and worlds. So for all those many Krishnas or single Krishna, if there is false ego, what about true ego? Oh, that's a wonderful question. I can speak for another 1 hour on this topic. Yes, there are many, many, many universes. And every universe has got one Brahma. We'll discuss this. It will. So 9 sessions of Gita are there. And after that, you know, for interested people, I conduct something called as advanced sessions, level 2 Gita course. So in that, the first session is called as Kala, time. So in this Kala section, we'll discuss the lifespan of Brahma and, you know, various categories of Brahma in different universes and other things. So yes, every universe has got one Brahma. Now, when it comes to Krishna, so Krishna is only one because he's God. So Krishna is one. And then, you know, through him comes various universes and we have, you know, various Brahmas. This will become more clear in the 8th session, you know, because we're going to discuss a lot of things about the Tattva of God. Tattva means truth of God or concept of God. So we'll discuss that in the 8th session. So this will become more clear. Let me now answer about the false ego and true ego. So we said the subtle body consists of what? Subtle body consists of first mind, intelligence and false ego. Correct? So now the question is, oh, if there is a false ego, then what is true ego? False ego means I am the master. I am this body. That is false ego. I repeat, I am the master. I am this body. That is false ego. And what is the true ego? True ego is I am servant of Krishna. That is true ego. So this point of false ego, true ego has to be understood very clearly. Now people in this world, people feel they're really great. Very great. You know, people, they're proud, so much proud, so egoistic. They think that, oh, they are, you know, they are someone you know, who are supreme. Yes, they're masters, they're boss. This is what is the feeling. Are what sort of boss we are? Now, what supremacy we have? Morning nature's call we cannot control. And we call ourselves as boss. We call ourselves supreme. What sort of controllers we are? We are good for nothing people, to be very frank. So when we are proud of ourselves, it's actually a false pride. It's actually false ego that I am this body. Are we this body? We made it very clear in the last session. We are not this body, we are spirit soul. So basically we are believing something false that I am this body. And when we're believing in something false, and we are completely attached to this falsity, this false identity, that is called as false ego. And our real identity is we are servants of Krishna. Oh, now you might ask, please tell us, how are we servants of Krishna? How can you say that we are servants? Just a man comes to you and say that you are a servant. It's almost like a blasphemy, isn't it? But the fact is, we all are servants. Now let me give you some logic to understand this. This comes in, you can read in the introduction of Bhagavad Gita as it is. Very nicely it is mentioned. So all of us, if you properly analyze, every single moment we are serving. Right? Like for example, in the country, when it comes to, what is the topmost position in a country? A president or prime minister, isn't it? So, but what do they call themselves as? The servants of citizens. Correct? Now, when it comes to in the family, we might say that, I am the master of the family. But then, okay, you might be the master, but what are you doing? You're serving your spouse, you're serving your kids, you're taking care of them, so you're serving. You go to office, what do? You serve your company, you serve your boss. In fact, it is said, when no one around to serve, people keep a dog. And they keep serving the dog. At least here in India, it's still okay. I heard from my friends and superiors who are out in Western countries. So they were telling that there's a fine if the dog passes stool on the street. So they have to carry a bag with them and they should have gloves also. There's a special activity they have to do, and they have to keep a watch that when this dog will pass stool, and as soon as the dog passes the stool, the master, the one who is calling the master of the dog, he picks up the stool with his hands, as if he's taking prasadam. Picks up in the hand and puts it in that garbage bag which he's carrying. Can you imagine? You're walking with a dog, and in the other hand you have stool of the dog, and you're walking and you call yourself as master. And also, when sometimes the dog takes or the master takes the dog for a walk, it becomes very difficult to understand who is the master, dog or the person, because dog directs the person. No, the dog runs, the person runs behind. The dog takes him to filthy places and he has to go to filthy places. So, not serving a dog. So, basically, what are we doing? We're serving our family members. We're serving the friends and colleagues and, society, nation, the entire world. This is what we're doing. We're serving all the time. But then you will say, no, I'm sitting alone in the room. I'm not serving anyone. You're still serving. Whom are you serving? You're serving your mind. You're serving your senses. We're still serving. So the point is, we all are serving. All the time we are serving. So the service which is there, it's an urge which is there inside. Everyone has this urge of service. So everyone is serving. Like for example, all of us have urge of thirst, of hunger. So whenever there is an urge, there is a fulfillment given to that in this world. So urge of thirst, what is the fulfillment? Drinking of water. So it quenches our thirst. And then the urge of hunger. So food is available. So that satisfies our hunger. Similarly, the urge of service, which is there in us, or the urge of worship, which is there in us, that is also satisfied when we worship or serve the right person. But then from so many lifetimes, and even in this life, we have been serving to so many people. But still, why there is no fulfillment to this? Why? Because we are not serving the right object. Right? Because originally, we are servants of Krishna. But then, because of this false ego, we are serving people around. We are serving people around. And because of that, since we are not serving the right person, what is happening? There is no fulfillment to that urge of service. And that is the reason now people are not satisfied. This urge of service, the urge of worship is not satisfied. Right? So what is a true ego? True ego is coming back to one's constitutional position of serving God, serving Krishna. That is called as true ego. Then we can say, collar tight, I am servant of Krishna. Currently, what do we say? When someone tells, you did such a nice thing. This project was completed so fast by you. You're so amazing. You're so skilled. And we are like, I did it. You didn't do. Yes, those skills are given to you by whom? Krishna has given. All these talents, like for example, I always give this example to all my students in various sessions. Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, Sarvasya chaham hridi sannivishta matta smritir jnanam apohanam cha. I give forgetfulness, remembrance and jnana, knowledge. Krishna says this in Bhagavad Gita. Because he's there as Paramatma in the heart. And he does that. Now, suppose you're a very, very skilled and talented person. And you're giving the most important presentation of your company that's going to decide the turnover, or that's going to decide the big profit that's going to come. If that deal is missed, a big profit is lost, we'll be in loss. So this is the presentation that is going on. And you have made amazing slides entire night. You have prepared very nicely. You're very skilled when it comes to talking and persuading people. You're very good at that. And there are a lot of PPTs and a lot of text is there in every slide. But in one slide, there's a diagram. No text on that. Only a pic is there, or diagram is there. So you're explaining very nicely, very, very, with a lot of charisma. You're explaining various slides. And then, a very, very talented person, he turns behind and he sees the next slide. And that slide is that pic, that diagram. And suddenly the person forgets. And what happens? The entire presentation collapses. Why the person forgot? He's a talented person. Why did he forget? Where is that forgetfulness coming from? And sometimes we see that we have heard or read something long, long time back and remember that? How come that remembrance comes? And just few minutes before that we have studied or heard, we don't remember that the next moment. Why? No, we are controlled. We are given the remembrance, forgetfulness by Lord Himself. Yes. So when we say that I did it, no, that credit is not ours. That credit is God's. He's doing. We are just instruments. Like, for example, this mobile phone which is there. So this mobile phone doesn't speak. I speak through the mobile phone. So it acts as instrument. Similarly, we are like the instruments of the Lord. So when these instruments are serving the Lord, they are in the right constitutional position and they are having the ego. People who are always like, I did that, I did this, etc., etc., they're in the false ego. They consider that this body is, they are this body and everything that they're doing is only by their endeavor. The results are coming only by their endeavor. So in next session, we'll discuss about how to work in that. It will be more clear that how people live falsely in this world. So hope now you got the difference between what is false ego and true ego. Yes. Now the next question, which is put forward here is, speaking of attachment, so this is, that question was Jyoti M. Kotamasu asked this question. And next question is Vrishanka Istlor. So their question is, speaking of attachment, how is it that soul is not attached to the body even though it lives in the body for years together? In a near-death experience, what makes the soul come back to the body? How is the time and circumstance of the soul leaving the body decided during death? Does the soul leave the body when we dream? Which is to be given priority? Okay, this is a different question altogether. So, and maybe I can take a few more questions. Okay. Ananya Potar, she has a question. Why don't all the souls get reincarnated? Because we hear people saying there are spirits around us. This is a question. So this question will actually lead us to a discussion of ghosts. We'll discuss that now. And then again, we have a question. If soul cannot be created or destroyed, when there is increase in human population from decades, how is the increase in souls possible? Who is giving birth to souls? Pramoda is asking this question. Okay, let me take one by one. So wonderful questions. Speaking of attachment. So the question is, that why isn't soul attached to the body? That is the question. So many lifetimes the soul is there in this body. Why the soul is not getting attached to the body? To be very frank, soul is completely attached to this body to such an extent that it thinks that I am this body. To such a great extent, the soul is attached to the body. So in the near to the experience, what happens is, even I had this question, so I did some research on this. So in near to the experience, what happens is, it's like, suppose, you imagine your car is going downhill, okay? You switched off the engine. So the car is going downhill. Now, when the car is going downhill, the car is just moving aside, right? So when it comes to this body and soul, the relationship that is there. So in the near death experience, what happens is the soul comes out of the body. The soul comes out of the body and even when it is coming out of the body, the soul sees the body and it is thinking, oh, I'm lying here. Can you imagine? If you remember that video that I had shown in the last session, even when that lady, the soul came out, she was thinking, oh, this was a very critical time. I was going through a critical situation. I was going through an operation. I didn't know you're out of the body. Now, why are you saying that you're going through a critical situation? That is a tight connection that the soul has with the body. The soul thinks that I am the body. That's the problem. Now, when it comes to that car example which I was giving, now the soul comes out of the body. So what happens? So at that time, it's like the car just moving the downhill. And when the soul enters the body, it's like started. Engine started, body started working. Simple. So you can stop the car, you can take reverse, something like that. Right? So this near-death experience, which is there. So this happens, as I already said, when a high dose of anesthesia is given and when the body is termed as critically dead and things like that, or clinically dead. So at that time, the soul gets a chance to come out and witness what is going on. Right. So, but still, if soul is coming out, it can just escape, right? As your question says, that soul is not attached to the body. But actually, the answer is the soul is attached to the body. Because when it comes out of the body, it can escape. But it is not escaping. Why it's not escaping? Because the soul is completely attached to the body. It goes out and it comes inside. It goes out and it comes in. Now, this is a very rare situation, by the way. This is like, no, the clinically dead state and other things I'm talking about. But now there's a question which talks about the general death, you know, which happens. So, does the soul leave the body? What was that question? So, basically, it talked about how is the time and circumstance of a soul leaving the body decided during death? So, when it comes to time and circumstance, so the death date is fixed. Okay, there is no question of, you know, moving the death date here and there. I'm talking about normal public. I'm not talking about the yogis and the bhaktas. I'm not talking about them. I'm talking about normal, general populace. So when someone takes birth, like for example, in a manufacturing company, when a product is manufactured, so manufacture date is printed. At the same time, what is printed with that? Expiry date is printed. Similarly, when we come out of the womb of the mother, the birth date, the manufacturing date is there. And what do we call it as? Happy birthday to you. That is what we talk about, manufacturing date. But then, what about the expiry date? That is also there. That is also there. The death date is also fixed. And who fixes this? We only fix our death date. How? That we'll discuss in the karma session. It is based on the karma. Karma of the person, the death date is also fixed. That's the technical term is called prarabdha. Prarabdha decides the birth, prarabdha decides the death. So we'll discuss these terminologies there in the karma session, the fourth session. So now, when it comes to when the person will be leaving the body, yes, when the death date comes, the person has to leave the body. So every single day, all of us are carrying a time bomb with us. And the time bomb is just ticking, tick, tick, tick. The only thing is we're not able to hear, Only when we come to a Bhagavad Gita session, we start hearing, yes, it's ticking. Yes. And look at our situation. Now, every now and then we see so many people dying around, but we are convinced, no, I'll not die. That person died. This person died. Oh, that person also died. But I will live. I will live. Nothing will happen to me. You know, Corona will not do anything to me. Corona and me are best friends, right from childhood. Nothing will happen to me. That's how people live their life, isn't it? So, why? Because they are unaware and they're in ignorance that the time bomb, the time is ticking and one day it's going to blast. The person is going to die. Yes. So, who decides the time and circumstance, etc.? That is decided. As soon as the person takes birth, along with that, there is a death date that is also stamped. The expiry date is also stamped and the person has to die on that date. Obviously, when it comes to devotees, that's a different thing. Sometimes the death date also changes because devotees are directly under the direction of Krishna. So that's a completely different thing that we can discuss sometime later about that. So hope you get the answer. That who decides the death date? We, based on our past karma. And as soon as we take birth, based on the past karma, our death date is fixed and that is stamped on us. And we have to die. No one can escape. No one can escape the death date. No one can escape death. Not possible at all. Many scientists are, they're working on creating life. No, we cannot create life. Not possible. Max to max, we can create some matter. Just combine earth, water, fire, ether and make some matter. But creating life means putting the soul inside. And how can we put the soul inside? Yes, we ourselves don't know that we are spirit soul. How can we get some energy like that and put in the body and make it work? No, we cannot do that. So hope you get the answer of how the time and place or circumstances decided about death. One line answer, it is decided by the karma of the past. As soon as the person takes birth, even he is born with the death date. So death date is not decided with time. No, it's decided before itself. So this is clear. Now there's another question which talks about wandering spirits. Now let's get inside a topic of ghosts. Why don't all the souls get reincarnated? Because we hear people saying there are spirits around us. So now everyone who is hearing me, so chant the Hare Krishna Mahamantra, because we're going to discuss about ghosts. And it is said that wherever Hare Krishna Mahamantra is chanted, there these evil spirits or ghosts cannot come. Now, I'm not going to explain ghosts or something like the ghost is like having the legs ulta, or the head is 360 degree rotating, you know, like this, or you know, wearing a white sari and things like that with open hair. That is only in the movies. Now, let me explain you the concept of ghost through the concepts that we have studied or heard in the last session. Again, we come back to the concept. What is that? Soul is covered by two bodies, subtle body and gross body. Now, when the person is very, very... there are two cases. Let me take the first case. The first case is when people commit suicide. What happens when the person commits suicide? Let me tell you now. Now, all of us have got something called as free will. Many times people ask this question, is everything in life decided? No, everything in life is not decided. So our karma of the past decides the situation, circumstance of our life. And how do we react in that situation? That is up to us. That creates the next set of karma, because that's the free will that is given to us. So that's the free will. We can act the way we want in that particular situation. Like, for example, today, all of you had an option. What was that option? You had an option of attending the class or skipping the class. So the circumstance was there. Circumstance is there. So maybe, you know, maybe there are some TV shows going on, and here you've got the invitation of exclusive Q&A session. So circumstance was there, but then you chose one, right? So the choice is ours. Similarly, what happens is, suppose a person is destined to live for 60 years. Say he's destined to live for 60 years. So he has taken birth and there's a stamp. So happy birthday to you is done. And after that, there's a stamp. And what that stamp says, this person is going to live for 60 years. On this particular day, when he completes his 60th year, he's going to die. Suppose this is the statement. Now, the person is living this world completely frustrated. Arey, how much lockdown, how much work from home? And I'm working from home and these people, you know, my family members are harassing me like anything. I hope... many of us know this, that I'm just taking a tangent, you know, to make the mood light. So, you know, when this lockdown started, so most of the place in the metropolitan city, both husband and wife are working. So this was the first time situation that husband and wife are there together in the house for a long time, for many, many days and months together. And they realize, and after being together for a good number of days and weeks and months, that, no, I don't think we're compatible. I think we should divorce, give divorce to each other. And we saw that, you know, we heard that there were so many divorce cases in this span of, you know, five to 6 months. That is the lockdown period, you know, which was there. So suppose a person is completely frustrated. Like, no, I cannot bear this. I cannot. It's too much for me. And that person is destined to live for 60 years, but now he's in his 30s. And then he decides, no, I want to end this body. And what happens? He hangs himself, he dies. Now, ideally, what should happen? Dehi nosmin yatha dehe kaumaram yavanam jara tatha dehantara praptir. Correct? So when he has left the body, he should go to another body. But now the thing is, he was destined to live for 60 years. And only at the end of 60th year, his next body was going to get ready. By this material nature, Prakriti would get the next body ready. But now the problem is, he has left the body at the age of 30 itself. Next 30 years, what will happen? This is the question. So what will happen is, he has left the gross body, and then the soul, along with the subtle body, comes out forcefully. And now since he has made this body dead, or this body invalid, he cannot enter the body back. Simple. So now the soul with the subtle body has gone out and the next body is not ready. So where will the soul and subtle body go? It will keep wandering here and there in this material world. And now another important thing is, now let's stand. I'm making this session more technical. I don't know how many of us are able to understand. can we have a poll? How many of us are understanding? Can we raise our hands? How many of us are understanding this concept that I'm explaining? Okay, so okay, all of you, many are saying that they're understanding. Thank you very much. Now I'm entering a technical topic, more technical. So let me explain now. So now, soul is independent. Soul does not need a body. Okay, soul does not need a body. Soul is independent. But then, with so many lifetimes, now the soul is there in the body. Soul starts thinking, I need this body. I need this body. Without this, I cannot live. Okay, so this is what is the thing that is there. Now, when it comes to the assumption of soul, so the soul thinks that it needs the body to enjoy. Now, what has happened? Soul with the subtle body has come out completely. There is no gross body, but the urges of hunger, the urges of thirst, the urge of sensual pleasures, everything is there. That urge is there because these urges are stored in the mind or intelligence, that subtle body. No, this is, these urges are stored and these urges are there. And now the soul with the subtle body, it is having the urge, but it's, it is not able to fulfill the urge. It's like your hands are tied, your mouth is plastered, your legs are also tied on a chair. Hands and legs are tied to the chair. Your mouth is plastered completely. And then you are completely hungry because you're fasting for one complete day. And there's a huge plate of prasadam that is kept. Chappan bhog is kept. Everything is there in that. Your eyes are not plastered, but you can see. You're seeing it, but you cannot eat it. You're hungry, but you cannot eat it. Now, can you imagine what situation I'm talking about? The person will go crazy. He's shaking the chair. You know, he's going crazy, completely crazy, but he cannot eat. He's completely tied. That's what is the situation of the wandering soul. The wandering soul with the subtle body, it has a lot of urges, but it is not able to fulfill those urges because it needs a gross body to fulfill the urges. Okay? Now, you all might have heard that ghosts enter different bodies, correct? So whose bodies now these ghosts enter? So for sure, they want to fulfill the urge of various urges that they have. So they have to enter, you know, some body. That is very much important. So they will enter a gross body of someone. And especially those people who are spiritually, who are not practicing spirituality, who are emotionally very weak. Yes. These are the people whom, you know, these wandering souls choose and they enter that body. And what happens in that body? Already one soul was there and now another soul also comes. So now what happens is this: the soul which has entered from outside, that suppresses the activities of the soul which is already present. So that soul is there in the dormant state now. It is just there. But now this soul takes over the entire body and you'll see that the person behaves crazily. Crazily. The talk that the person has and, you know, I mean, the ghost haunted person, you know, he has got, you know, so many different talks and something nonsense the person will talk and the behavior is so crazy and so on and so forth, right? So in this way we see, you know, through technically we can understand now what is this ghost all about. See, ghost is not something, you know, very big concept to understand. You know, it's a simple concept. Without a gross body and a subtle body, soul is roaming out with a subtle body. Now that is called as ghost. And since it needs a gross body to satisfy the urges which are there, it enters another body. Simple. There's no, not much of discussion needed here. So when a person commits suicide, he becomes a ghost. When a person is extremely sinful, very, very sinful, he becomes a ghost. I see there is a question which talks about, where is that question? It talks about the heaven and hell. I saw it somewhere. Yes. So Richa Agarwal, you know, she is asking this question. In the last session, we discussed about how a soul leaves one mortal body and enters into another form body. So is it an unending process? Then why do we say that a soul goes to the hell, heaven, or any loka after death according to his or her own karma? Please elaborate on this point. So now this will take, we'll talk about the hell and heaven now. So now let me talk about the wandering soul and then we'll talk about that. So this wandering soul, you know, suffers a lot. There is no gross, so many urges are there, and then it cannot get a gross body till it completes that particular span, which is there. So this is compared not to a prisoner who has escaped the prison. Please hear this carefully. Now, when a prisoner is there in the prison, a criminal is there in the prison, and somehow escapes from the prison. Now, when he's caught back by the cops, what will happen? Punishment that is there, that will become more critical, isn't it? Same thing here also. This body is like a prison, okay? And the soul is there in this prison. And it escapes from the prison without undergoing the punishment that is there in this prison. It escapes. And then what happens? It escapes and it always hides from whom? Not from the cops, or not from the government, not from the top personality. So this wandering souls who are there, they always try to hide from the places from the places where there is presence of bhakti, where there is presence of Supreme Personality of Godhead Krishna. Yes. That's the reason, you know, we say that when we chant the Hare Krishna Mahamantra, no, there cannot be any ghost. That person cannot be afflicted, you know, by any ghostly body, right? Why? Because a prisoner is always afraid of the cops, because they know very well, abhi pakda to fir se dal denge, right? So that is the thing. But then when it comes to soul, the ghost which is there, it's not understanding that it's already suffering, and this suffering is the punishment that is given by Prakriti by not giving the next gross body. This is the punishment that is given. And this punishment is much, much higher. And people who are very, very sinful, such people are given this ghostly body and made them suffer like anything. Now, the question which I just read says that, that the soul transfers from one body to another, and it's an unending cycle depending on karma. Then where is the concept of heaven and hell? So hope all of us have understood about the concept of ghost. So people who commit suicide, people are extremely sinful. Now, those are the people who get ghostly body and they suffer a lot, right? It's almost like a hellish suffering which these people get, these personalities get. Now, talking about the hell and heaven, something similar. Now, who gets a human body? Let's try to discuss that. So like in the case of ghost, you know, we made it very clear that he himself, you know, leaves the body. The body is not ready, and so he has to wander and suffer. Similarly here, you know, when there's a threshold, say, this is the threshold. So two thresholds. This is the threshold of punya and this is the threshold of papa. Okay. Now, suppose the person has committed some papa punya between this range, is eligible to get a body on this earth. Okay. Now he has committed a lot of papa. Now that is below this. So what happens? That person will be put in hell and he has to suffer there. Till when he has to suffer? Till his papa comes to this threshold, and again he comes back to this range. And when he comes back to this range, again he gets a body on earth. Now a person who has done a lot of activities, whose punya is above this range, that person goes to heaven. And there he enjoys very nicely. And when he enjoys, credits are getting over. And when he comes back again to this range, he gets a human form in this world, in this material world, right? On this earthly planet. Same with the ghost also, I said. A lot of papa are committed, something like hellish condition, you know, which ghost is also put in. So in this way, who goes to hell and who goes to heaven? A person's got a lot of papa below the threshold of a human body. So that person is put into hell. And what happens in the hell? In the hell, there is no new thing that is done. In the hell, only suffering is given. To what extent? Till the person suffers and suffers and suffers and finishes off lots of his sinful deeds, those actions he has already got there. And after finishing all those sinful deeds, he comes up. Yes? So he is, again, within the range, he gets a human body. And in heaven, what happens? Nothing apart from enjoyment. So there are lots of enjoyment are there, you know, in the heavenly planets. Very nicely described. Somras, which gives a lot of kick, but at the same time, you know, the person does not behave very weirdly, like people behave in this world by having alcohol. And then the description of the females there, you know, very, very beautiful description are given in the Shastra. Ramba, Roshi, Menaka, etc. And the Gandharvas and Apsaras, all of them, singers and dancers. So very, very, you know, different place altogether. And you know, all those things are portrayed, you know, in the movies as fairy world or whatever. So that is heavenly planet. So there only people enjoy. There they don't suffer. And after enjoying, what happens? Their credits are getting over. Punya credits are getting over. Then they finally come back to this bracket. Again in this world. So hope now you understand who goes to heaven and who goes to hell and who becomes a ghost. Right? So in this way we see that, now we might think that we are really very intelligent, but then just imagine Prakriti, the energy of the Lord, this external energy of the Lord, how intelligent she is. She takes care of so many parameters, isn't it? So many parameters, and no one can escape from her. No one can escape from her. These parameters are nicely judged, and there are many, many witnesses. Now, we might feel that, oh, whatever I'm doing, no one is seeing. But there are many, many witnesses. Namely, sun is a witness, moon is a witness, Paramatma in the heart is a witness, Vayudev is a witness, Varundev is a witness. So many are there as witnesses. And none of us can escape, you know, from whatever nasty deeds that you know, we are doing. Anyways, we'll discuss more on these aspects in the karma session or the Q&A of karma session. We'll discuss more on this. But hope now I want about the heaven, hell, and you know, about spirits around. Now let me take the next set of questions. Let's take the life questions. Okay, so from the technical topic, now we come to emotional topic, because whenever life question comes, it's all about family problems. Now that's what we see. There are people around us who constantly nag about problems, would never like to come out of it or take solutions. Just want our attention, but they do disturb us in the process. How to shield ourselves and not get disturbed by them? So a very nice question. I'm sure most of you, you know, will be having this question. There are people, you know, when it comes to us as counselors, all the volunteers who are there, you know, they're also acting as spiritual counselors, and many, many people dump all the garbage where they keep telling you this happened, that happened. I don't know how to manage this life. I'm really going through a lot of suffering and problem. But then when you give a solution, they don't want to accept the solution. Why, you know? They just need a person who can hear whatever they're saying. Now you tell me, what is the job of a psychiatrist or a psychologist? Or a counselor, basically. A paid counselor who is there. So what is the job? So the person comes, you know, with a lot of problems, and the counselor will ask various questions. Oh, tell me about yourself. Oh, why did this problem come? Oh, what are you feeling? Now what are you feeling? Oh, okay. So that's not really bad. But now in that situation, what did you feel? Oh, this situation, what did you feel? And they just make the person speak. That's it. And then they say that, okay, you do these things and we'll meet, you know, after a week or so again. And then he keeps speaking. So basically, there are some people who don't want any solution. They just want to dump, you know, whatever negativity is there in them onto other person. So this negativity aspect, whenever it comes, now one thing we have to understand is, if we are very much positive, you know, this negativity will not affect us. That's how, you know, we when we do spiritual counseling, you know, so much of negativity is dumped, not to be very frank, so much of negativity. But then everyday spiritual practice that is there, you know, that creates a lot of positivity. And then, you know, it becomes easy, you know, for a spiritual counselor to absorb that negativity. So the same thing applies to all of us. When our spiritual practice is strong, see, when I say strong, I mean everyday practice. It's not like, oh, Thursday I'll chant once and Sunday I'll chant once and middle I'll not chant. No, it will not work. It will not work. Every single day spiritual practice, you know, when we are doing, at that time, what happens is, now there's a lot of positivity that is created, and we'll be able to absorb that negativity which is there around us. So this aspect of having lots of positivity within is very, very important in this world, because there are lots of people to dump their negativity. And that positivity can only be created by practice of bhakti, practice of spirituality. That is chanting of Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. The ones who don't do this spiritual practice every single day, they will be the prey, they'll be the victims of the onslaught of the negativity from all around. And then when these people will speak, you know what happens? When these people speak, the person gets shaken like anything, shaken completely. He loses his stability, he loses, his, stability. So he loses his stability. But then why is he losing stability? And something from outside is happening. Why our inner stability is lost? If you remember in the first session, I had given the analogy of, I don't know if I gave it in this session or somewhere else. I'll repeat. So the analogy of the particles on the waves of the ocean and the particles deep inside the ocean. So normally people who are living in this world, they are like the particles on the waves of the ocean. As soon as the wind comes, the particles keep moving with the waves. But the wind which is blowing on the surface does not affect in any ways to the particles who are deep inside the ocean. They're stable. So the people who don't practice spirituality, people who are just living their life like cats and dogs, who just want to live. I shouldn't say live also. I should say exist. The people who just want to exist in this world, they are like the particles on the surface of the ocean. As soon as the wind of negativity comes, the wind of lots of problems and troubles and sufferings come, they keep moving. They keep moving. They keep moving. Right? And then they say this, there's lots of instability. I'm not able to hold myself, hold my composure, and so on and so forth. But then with spiritual practices, what happens? With chanting of Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, every single day's mantra meditation, you know what happens? The person who is there on the surface, the particle which is there on the surface, it gets the qualification to go deeper and deeper and deeper and deeper of the ocean. And when the particle, is there deep in the ocean, that wind cannot do anything to that. The wind is blowing. See, wind is blowing. Wind has not stopped blowing. What has happened? The particle has changed position. So in this world, the negativity will not stop. In this world, people are not going to change. They are going to be the way they are. Yes? The problems in this world are not going to change. Today it's corona, tomorrow something else will come. Right? It was earthquake somewhere. Somewhere it was tsunami. Somewhere it was drought. Somewhere it was floods. Problems are part of life. That is there. Problems are never going to go. But like wind is never going to stop, similarly problems are never going to end. But we have an option to choose which particle we want to be. Particle on the surface or particle deep inside the ocean. And when the person practices spirituality, when he does mantra meditation every single day, takes association of people who are practicing mantra meditation, that is called as satsang, and reads Bhagavad Gita, applies those principles in life, he becomes a deep person. He gets deep inside the ocean. Or he becomes a person, who has literally entered deep inside his own life. So such a person can never be shaken by anything. Never. Whatever negativity it might be. Whatever. That's the reason you see genuine sadhus were there. Genuine sadhus. They're least bothered about everything of this world. They just wander from one place to another. They're least bothered who will give food, what will happen to me. It's so pitch dark, it's a forest. There's so many carnivorous animals. They're least bothered. Why? They're least bothered external circumstances because they have internalized so much. They have gone deep so much that it hardly matters what is happening outside. Right? Just imagine if we can become like this, if we can go deep and become the particle in the deep ocean. Just imagine how wonderful our life, how wonderful it will be. Right? We'll be able to help so many people around. Firstly, we'll be able to withstand all the onslaught of all the problems around. And at the same time, we'll be able to help others who are actually facing negativity. Right? All glories to Srila Prabhupada, who was such a deep person. This personality, Srila Prabhupada, the founder Acharya of ISKCON, just imagine, and I'm going to speak about him in some session, but just to give you a glimpse, at the age of 70, this personality, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada, he travels on a cargo ship and he goes to the West. And you know where he stays? He stays in a place where all hippies are there. I hope you understand what do I mean by hippies. Oh, that was a hippie cult or hippie culture that was going on, where they were like drunkards and women monglers and, you know, drug addicts and so on and so forth. So those people, he was staying amongst them. So you can imagine the negativity that was there. But this person was so deep in his life and such an elevated soul, such an enlightened soul. He went to that place and it was like in a dark room. Oh, there was a high volt bulb, no, that was lit. Entire room, you know, became lit. I mean, all those hippies were actually turned to happies. They became pure and they started living a very, very holistic life. So this is called as becoming a particle deep inside the ocean. And all of us have to do this. If we don't do in this world, we cannot sustain. Trust me, we cannot sustain this world. Now we might think, oh, okay, I'll keep doing my work. I'll keep doing my things. It's like a person saying, I will drive very, very safely. I'll keep my speed limit to, you know, 40 or whatever, and I know I'll ride the bike very safely, drive the car very safely. You might drive safely, you might ride safely. Are Baba, what about other people who are there around? Will they allow you to do this? I still remember I was coming back from a session. No, this is in Bangalore. I was coming back from a session and I was on a bike. So one of my students was taking me on a bike. So I was sitting behind. And we were on Pulsar. So you know, we were coming back, you know, to the ashram. So he was doing, he was a safe rider, you know, so he rides very nicely. So I had complete trust and I was sitting with him. And then, you know, we were going, well, that's a narrow lane and we were going. And behind comes a big bolero. And that person was a drunkard. He just hits the bike from behind. Somehow by Krishna's mercy, you know, we were safe, completely safe. Nothing happened. No scratch came. But you know, I was just thinking, Are we were doing safe riding, you know, what happened suddenly? So the mudguard which was there and the tire, so between that the mud of bolero got stuck completely. So the point that I'm trying to make is we might be the safe riders or safe drivers, but there are people around who will not allow us, no, to remain safe. So if we want to remain safe in this world and be happy in this world, only one thing we can do. Become a deep person by practicing Krishna consciousness, by chanting the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra every single day, coming to satsang regularly, because only this place is a place where you'll get positivity. I challenge, tell me any other place where you can get positivity. There's no other place, no other place where positivity is given. And what is the source of positivity here? The source of positivity is Krishna. Because of him, we are getting this positivity. And you know, there's a second thing. So first one is chanting, second is satsang, third is reading Bhagavad Gita, and then imbibing the teachings of Bhagavad Gita. So on the request of many, many people, so everyone were requesting about, we want to hear Bhagavad Gita on daily basis, shloka by shloka. So from 18th September onwards, we're going to release videos every single day. Yes, so I'll be speaking in these videos, and we'll be taking 1 month shloka a day. So per shloka, no, one shloka a day. It's like a daily dose of Bhagavad Gita. That's what you know, we have planned. And every day we can hear and we can read, you know, or about that particular shloka, the translation, the explanation. And that will max, it will take some 10 to 15 minutes. If we can do this every single day, trust me. Now at the end of these series of sessions, now you will be the person who will say, Prabhu, can you please continue the sessions? We don't want to end. Or you'll be the one who would tell others, please watch these videos. You know, these are very beneficial. Please read Bhagavad Gita. This is very beneficial. Chant. This is very beneficial. When those volunteers were calling you, they are the ones who have relished. They are the ones who have overcome all the problems now which they were facing. Or they now very well have the strength to withstand all those problems. And with that confidence, every Thursday or sorry, Saturday or Sunday, now they gave you a call to ask, are you coming for the session or not? Please come. It's very, very beneficial. Now, why are they speaking with so much confidence? We don't pay them. And they're doing it voluntary. So they're called as volunteers, right? So this is the point that I'm saying. With constant practice of bhakti, all these problems that you know, you all are you know, facing, surely you know, we'll be able to overcome. Okay. Oh, it's already 8:23. I couldn't recognize. Okay. We just have 7 minutes, so let's start with mantra meditation. Oh, by the way, many of you are already texting us that we want to do mantra meditation in group. So 2 days we're going to do meditation in group, one on Tuesday and one on Saturday. Early morning, 5:30 to 7:30. This is the slot, 5:30 to 7:30. So all of us are going to come together on Zoom and we all will chant together. So if you want, you can be there for 2 hours and chant with us. Or you can come and chant 108 times and go. No, that's up to you. So there's no hard and fast rule. Yes. So it's Tuesday and Saturday. Don't forget. If you don't get the link, pester your volunteers. They'll send you the link. Okay. Now let's do the mantra meditation. We've spoken so much. Now let's get it into practice. Let's do mantra meditation.